Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, this is Mississippi Mason. You're listening to Porch Talk, and here's a brand new song that I wrote a while back about the Tom Bigby River. It's the river that goes through Columbus, Mississippi. This is called the Tom Bigby Bend. Tom Bigby is a long, windy river. Been many man who traveled on his way. The paddle boats are steaming, cause the river shore is streaming, and I'm gonna be a captain someday. Yes, I'm gonna be a captain someday. From Mississippi down to Alabama, the water's full of mud and the skies are gray. When Tibby Bale comes around, she'll blow her whistle sound, and I'm gonna be her captain someday. Yes, I'm gonna be your captain someday. Well, you can catch me on down Tom Bigby Bend. Lord, I don't know where I'm going, but I sure know where I've been. If you miss me, come and kiss me, but I'll have to tell you when. You can find me on down Tom Bigby Bend. You can find me on down Tom Bigby Bend. Yeah. Well, people hold on a little tighter. My boiler's running hot, we're near the end. Ain't no wood left to burn, but we gotta make the turn. Gotta push on through that rambling river bend. Gotta push on through that rambling river bend. It takes a hard-working man to be a captain. You gotta know every mile that river well. I have to be on time to collect the people's dime, cause I'm the captain of the Tibby Bell. Yes, I'm the captain of the Tibby Bell. Well, you can catch me on down Tom Bigby Bend. Lord, I don't know where I'm going, but I sure know where I've been. If you miss me, come and kiss me, but I have to tell you when. You can find me on down Tom Bigby Bend. You can find me on down Tom Bigby Bend. Well, you can catch me on down Tom Bigby Bend. Lord, I don't know where I'm going, but I sure know where I've been. If you miss me, come and kiss me, but I'll have to tell you when. You can find me on down Tom Bigby Bend. You can find me on down Tom Bigby Bend. Yeah.
Woo. Dude, welcome you to Porch Talk.
Appreciate it, man. Thank
you.
Got
Mississippi Mason here with me tonight.
That's right.
We're back in the same spot we were last night with Braden. I'm excited for this episode. First met Mason. He was opening up for my friend Adam Hood at the Columbus Heart Council. And
yep,
we got a lot of ground to cover. I wanted to start out with, where are you from?
I'm from right here in Columbus, Mississippi. I was born and raised on the river and fished all my life, and I don't plan on stopping anytime soon.
Okay.
And I'm from Columbus, Mississippi.
Appropriate song opener.
That's right. Tom Bigby Bend.
So where would you go to school?
So, I went to school a lot of different places. New Hope High School is where I went to high school at, over south of Columbus. And then after that, you know, I got a free chance to go to EMCC based on some tuition thing that they had back when I was in school. I don't think they have it anymore. But it's where you get, if you graduate from a school in Lowndes County, you get to go to EMCC for free. So I went to there to EMCC and got a associate's in business management. And from there, that's when I found out
that music is what I want to do with my life, and that's what I want to be my legacy. And so I went to Delta State University in Cleveland, Mississippi, and as part of the Delta Music Institute, and graduated from the Delta Music Institute with a major in entertainment industry entrepreneurship.
I know a little bit about the music biz, do you?
Yeah, that's what I went to school for.
Well, man, that's pretty sharp. Just to back it up a little bit, born and raised in Columbus, was into fishing.
Oh, yeah.
What about guitar? What was you into, like, as far as when you were a kid, what were you doing?
Well, if you want to go back in time as far as music and stuff, you know, everything for me started with my dad. My dad was a gospel singer. Mm-hmm. He had back in the day, gospel quartets was a big thing, especially Southern gospel quartets was a big thing. And my dad was the bass singer for the Hartman Quartet based out of Columbus, Mississippi.
Oh, nice.
Back in 1993. And of course I was born in 2000, so I wasn't born in 93, but growing up I was dragged around, mm-hmm. forced to carry some speakers, which I appreciate so very much that he'd made me do that. He used to carry me all across the South. Yeah. just being an old roadie and helping them out. That's where I got introduced to music at. And it wasn't long that I wanted to pick up a guitar. And I actually originally wanted to pick up a banjo. And my mom told me, no, you got to do guitar first before you do a banjo. So that's why they got me a banjo.
I've been on this venture for the past 3 months. I recently bought a banjo. And that was because some of my favorite singer-songwriters right now, Clawhammer, of that style, mm-hmm. but they translated it over to guitar. And when I got to listen to all these cats, I was like, why do they sound so different? And then I realized it was the approach, and then mm-hmm. you find out a little bit about them. It was like, well, they were banjo players, and they learned how to play guitar.
Right.
So that's very – it's interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of songwriters nowadays, especially in the Americana scene, mm-hmm. the more traditional country style there, picking up some banjos. You know, banjo kind of got lost there kind of when the 90s came. Kind of got pop country kind of stuff. And
it never left.
Yeah, so – but – banjos are, I love a banjo, you know, I play a little bit of one, but I play guitar most of the time, you know.
Same, dude. I am nowhere near where I want to be with that banjo. Like, I'll pick it up in the evenings if I got a chance and just try to meander my way through it.
Right.
So, you were a roadie with your dad's gospel quartet. About that, man, I don't even, like, it's 90s. I was born in 90, and when I was coming up to high school, it would go out of existence. But the FFA at where I went to high school in South Lamar, they would put on like quartets.
Now, what's the F?
Future Farmers of America.
Okay.
But one of the guys that was involved with the FFA, he was a worship leader at one of the local churches, and he was really into music. And
they would bring quartets and stuff like that?
Oh, he trained a quartet. Right. He had a soprano, alto, a tenor, and a bass, and man, they won some ribbons, dude. They were cooking.
Right.
And on top of that, they would branch out to do like full gospel bands with mandolins and the whole get-up. But by the time I had gotten up there, I mean, it was dissolved and it was no more. It's like the whole way... It seems things were done is just totally different now.
Well,
you know?
It's the whole idea of quartet music is it's not as big as it was. There's still quartets out there. You got the Kingsmans and you got mm-hmm. the Perrys, and the Isaacs originally was a quartet group, but they branched into more bluegrass, just a bluegrass gospel band, and now they're playing on the Grand Ole Opry every night. You know.
Yeah.
And but it just seems like quartet music is a you know, maybe it'll come back. You never know. You see a lot of R&B gospel quartets, especially down in the Delta. If you ever go to the Delta, there's a lot of R&B gospel quartets. Yeah. I don't know how else to describe it besides that. There's a lot of quartets out there. But my dad was strictly Southern gospel, so like Gaithers and stuff like that. So.
Dude, I'm with it. Like, I like going to a church service when they get a special performer, and if it happens to be a quartet, I guess it's old soul in me, but I am for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. Like when you got people who can actually do it,
especially if you got a live band, because you know, my dad used to have a live band.
Oh,
and they went to CD, and it tore me up because you know, it's kind of the cheap way up.
Yeah,
you can do your songs, but it's just not the same. Yeah. It's like having a DJ versus having an actual band there. It's huge. I mean, it's a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason why people call me to put shows together, because they don't want to do a DJ or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's completely different.
So, back to you. Mom said no banjo, you got to pick up guitar first.
Yes.
So, what would that look like? Would you be self-taught, or would you get lessons from someone?
Actually, here in Columbus, there's a place called the Burning Piano. And I have my cousin's friends. I'm saying that because I don't know if you've ever been to the Burning Piano.
I have a time or two.
I don't know if you ever heard of a guy named Stephen Honnell.
Yes.
Oh, you know Stephen Honnell?
I do.
That's my cousin.
We are both Toyota Tacoma fans.
Oh, yeah.
Stephen, if you're listening, I'm going to come see you
soon, buddy.
But, we had what we called a stockholder meeting at Munson's.
Right.
And him and Dustin Gibson are good friends.
Yeah.
And Stephen came out for that. And we actually got Stephen to get up on stage and play for us a little bit.
Man, that's
which
that's
was
doing.
A treat.
Yeah. Oh, Stephen, very talented.
Mm-hmm.
I wish, deep down, I kind of wish he went into music and a little bit more, because, I mean, he's got a talent for it.
So he would be the guy that taught you?
So my mom, we knew he'd play guitar because, I mean, he's my family.
Yeah.
We all knew that. And so my mom hired him to come out to give me my first few lessons, and I don't even think he got paid much at all, but he was doing it because, you know, we're all family.
Right.
We wanted to have more music in our family, and Lord, we got plenty of it now. But he would come out like once a week or every 2 weeks to come teach me a few chords, and it really didn't get more than just learning chords and learning how to strum a song. He did teach me one finger-picking song, well, I'll never forget, Blackbird by the Beatles. You know, he loves the Beatles. I love the Beatles, too. But he taught me my first few chords, and after a while, kind of sent me on my way. He showed me YouTube is an asset. You know, you can learn a lot from YouTube.
And, yeah.
But the rest of it's been self-taught. And, of course, I've ran into different other people that's taught me stuff. Like Josh Gillis is usually here. I don't know if you know who that is, but
I haven't personally met him yet. We recently connected on social media, though.
Right. My music director taught him how to play guitar, and since in our free time, he teaches me a few things. So we kind of have the same guitar teacher in a sense. Where Mr. Richard, the guy, my music director at church, he taught me more music theory.
What about high school, dude? Was you picking and grinning then, or were you playing any kind of sports? What was you into? You chasing girls, all of the above?
Playing sports, Lord mercy. No, I tried to do football. I was in a gifted class for a while, but I left that because I was dumb, because I was kind of pressured into a football, because that's what everybody pressures their kid into doing, which I don't agree with. They made me leave my gifted class that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
For football, and you can look at me. I ain't built for football.
Really ain't built for it.
No, like I ain't built for it. And that doesn't offend me one bit.
You're a DB or a wide receiver.
Yeah, or a cornerback.
Yeah.
And a cornerback goes to the wide receivers who can't catch.
That's the way it goes. I will say this, like, it's been a conversation ever since, like, the Hamlin injury of I do like football for what it is in the regard of with teenagers or young men. I think it's a great sport for them to be able to be violent, to an extent that is fine, that doesn't lead to repercussions in public to get them going down a bad road.
Well, like, I want to be clear, like, I love football. Like, I watch football like crazy.
Yeah, just ain't for you.
And it's just I'm not built for it. Yeah. I broke too many bones.
Oh, you had some injuries.
Oh, yeah. I broke my wrist one time. We was playing football. It wasn't actually at a football game, but we was actually at the Mississippi State Stadium and the Junction playing football, and I broke my wrist doing that, kind of just messing around.
I got a lot of injuries when I was a kid from playing, like, back church football, like after
that. That's where it gets bad, because people, they tackle you full force with no pads.
That's it, yeah.
And that's what messes
you up. It wasn't a two-hand touch.
Now, here's how, look, here's how I broke my wrist, because this is what people tell you not to do. Somebody pushed me backwards, and I swung my arms back to try to catch myself.
Yep.
Broke my wrist. So ever since then, I kind of, you got to tuck and roll.
Oh, yeah. When I got taller, I realized quick, like anytime, like if I'm falling, just eat it. Don't try to catch yourself. Don't double step. Just take it.
Because if you take it, you're gonna at least for me, it feels like it's not gonna be as bad if you just take it.
Yeah,
just man up and take it.
Yeah, the only thing I would suggest maybe is like maybe cover your head.
Yeah,
but other than that, just eat it.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. You know, that wasn't even the injury that got me out of football.
Oh, it gets worse.
Well, it's not worse as worse injury, but it's worse for my music, because I was playing music. And I broke my finger. And that's a fear, buddy. When I broke my finger was the day that I got out of football. Mm-hmm. And I got tackled, and I just looked at my ring finger, and it was laying on top of my – I was trying to hold it straight, and it was just laying on top of my pinky. It was broke.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even the pain. It was just pain. But the thing was, is I didn't want to – That's when I realized that this could jeopardize me playing guitar. I mean, that's my livelihood.
Yeah.
So that was the day I got out of football. But, you know, during high school, nobody even knew I played guitar. I didn't tell anybody.
Oh, you went out with the hangouts and playing for everybody?
No, I was.
Oh, man, that's party trick number one right there.
I know, but I wasn't a party guy, man.
I got you.
You know, when I was in high school, you know, high school was rough, especially. I mean, I hate to talk crap about New Hope, but
I grew up and went to school at South Lamar, but when I got old enough to drive, I hung out in New Hope. So right. I know what you're talking about.
People at New Hope, especially in high school, they're ugly, especially middle school. They're
a little hazing going on.
There's a lot of hatred, especially when you're that young, because they'll try to find something that's different about you.
Mm-hmm. Pick you apart,
you know, which is, I mean, that's what you're going to expect. There's a bunch of teenagers, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't tell anybody that I played guitar because.
You didn't want anybody knowing he was a songbird, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what they did. I mean, they picked that kind of stuff out. So, but, you know, that's why when I went to music, I got a lot of friends calling me. It's like, man, I never knew you even did this. I didn't start writing songs until right before coronavirus started.
Is that real?
That's 100% true.
So, EMCC, free ride, like, why would you go into business management? Like, when I was getting ready for school, getting out of high school, I had no intention on college. And so, my grandma begged me to go.
Yeah.
So, I went to appease her. And I would end up in the tech field, like industrial electronics.
Right.
And I'd get that associates in that. But, like, business management, that's pretty smart for a teenager.
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a general. You know, your tech job, do you see?
Yeah.
I mean, that's needed big time.
And I still use it today.
I read somewhere, I can't remember where it's at, it may have been on Facebook.
Oh, it's like
one
of the
number one industries.
Oh, yeah.
Right now, that's with growth-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Because all this technology, especially with coronavirus, we become more dependent on computers and stuff since coronavirus started.
Mm-hmm.
That industry is just booming.
It is.
But, No, I did business because I knew I wanted to do music. Originally, I was going to do forestry.
Mm-hmm.
Originally. The first 2 months of me at MCC was trying to do forestry. And I found out, after talking to Braden Sansang, the guy you had last night,
mm-hmm.
after talking to him, to his dad is a forester, he quickly talked me out of it. He told me, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do forestry.
Yeah.
And I decided, you know, I'm not going to do it. So I went into something that I felt like was more general that I can use in a bunch of different industries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I went to business management.
And so after finishing up EMCC with business management, would you go directly to the Delta to study in Cleveland?
Yeah. So right before I graduated, I actually went and toured Delta State because I – like I said, or again, Braden Sansang, his sister,
mm-hmm.
went out there, and she knew I loved music.
Yeah.
And she was out there, too. And she told me about the Delta Music Institute and talked me into going to do a tour. And I went out there and saw all of these nice $100,000 studios. And I was like, you know what? I always wanted to do an album, and this would be my way to get a degree and do an album. So I decided to go to Delta State, to the DMI. You know, it is even that town, to show you how much music is out there in Cleveland, Mississippi, is they have a Grammy Museum. There's only two of them in the world. One's in Los Angeles, and another one's in Cleveland, Mississippi.
How about that?
That's crazy to me.
That really speaks to just Mississippi in itself.
Right.
I mean, I've had, like, international people on, and they've said it time and time again that, you know, at first when they came to the country, they went to New York, Big Apple, or they would go to Los Angeles.
Right.
But when they came back, they went straight to Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Because of what they found about America was Mississippi is about as America as it gets.
Yeah, that's where you're going to find the true heart of America is Mississippi.
Yeah. And especially if you're in the music.
I mean, think about it. There is no tourist attractions in Mississippi, basically.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
You know, and you could go to Tupelo. You could go to Elvis Presley's birth house.
I love Mississippi with a passion. But it's such a rural state. I mean, I guess Alaska would be more rural, right? But
Right,
but Mississippi is probably going to be the most heart or downhearted part of America.
Yeah, but like as far as tourism, you really have to seek it out, because I think about Bentonia with the Blue Front Cafe. If you don't know about it, you ain't never going to go. Or the Shack Up Inn is closed now, and Clarksdale. But I mean,
well, Mississippi is growing and tourist attractions, like Marty Stewart just opened up the Congress of Country Music in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. That's huge. That's the Grand Ole Opry of Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
as the Ellis Theater. That's a huge deal. And people don't realize that it is now the largest museum of country music in the world is in Philadelphia, Mississippi, not even in Nashville.
How about that?
Because Marty Stewart owned the largest museum in the world in country music. And he got that. Cleveland, Mississippi is growing in tourist attractions. And I mean, Braden, I used to carry around Braden to play around with me and over in Cleveland, and we've all seen it. I mean, the music out there has grown big time. And Mississippi is growing. It's still got a lot of ways to go.
That's right. I mean, what kind of music are we talking at Delta State? Is this like all walks of life, all different styles of music, or do they cater to a specific type?
No, at Delta State, it's all kinds of music. So I went there, and I found out I was the only country guy there.
Well, that gave you a leg up.
Yeah. But, you know, I was the only country artist. I mean, there is country.
I imagine a lot of these guys were chasing blues.
Well, specifically in the DMI.
Okay.
There was students outside the DMI that had cover bands where they did a few country songs, but they're doing more southern rock, you know, party songs. Mm-hmm. You know, but I came there as a guy that wanted to just be a recording artist in country. Most of the guys there are doing rap and pop and rock.
Mm-hmm.
And a few blues guys. You'd be surprised. There's only a few blues guys.
I figured it would be ate up with it.
You would think. Now, but, you know, a lot of the rock is blues, too. You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of all mingled together, you know. But that's just as far as the students. As far as the actual talent around town, it's pretty much blues. The older guys is at Deep Roots, which is a nonprofit organization used to actually promote music. There in Cleveland, they put on shows all across town called Deep Roots, and it's led by Trisha Walker, and who used to be Connie Smith's piano player. If you don't know who Connie Smith is, she's Marty Stewart's wife, and she's a big country artist. It plays on Grand Opera all the time,
mm-hmm.
and but it's mostly blues and country outside of Delta State. In Delta State, it's mostly rap.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Poppin' rock.
And so at this time, you are you haven't wrote your first song yet, right?
No, I hadn't wrote a song since before coronavirus.
Okay, so this you're just finishing up at Delta State during this time now? Like, I'm a little mixed up on the timeline.
Like, so the timeline, like, I graduated Delta State back in May.
Okay. Right. So you were at Delta State, like, during the whole pandemic,
basically. Yeah, so 2020 is when I started.
Okay. Yeah, right at the peak of it.
Yeah, I started August of 2020 and graduated this past May.
Okay. I mean, what was that like? Was it a lot of online classes, or was it kind of touch and go?
No, it was in-person classes, but it was, like, very social distance, mask, and, every day we would have to get stickers that they would check our temperature and give us stickers that said that, saying that we're good.
Yeah.
We did that all the way up to the end of 2021. My last semester there is when we decided not to wear a mask anymore.
Yeah.
And, I went to Delta State wanting to make an album. I mean, that's the whole reason why I went to the DMI out there at Delta State. And actually, we got that album done. It's called Just the Way I Am. It's kind of it's a collection of 10 songs that tells the stories and feelings of everyday Mississippians. And it's got a few cover songs that are popular with Mississippians, like Folsom Prison Blues.
Mm-hmm.
If you're living in Mississippi, you know about Folsom Prison Blues. And, yeah, we got that record done. It took about 2 years to do it after fundraising.
So you was working on that during your whole time at Delta? That's cool,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, so, in fact, the first year I was there, I recorded a small EP, a collection of songs, all original songs, just me and acoustic guitar called Unplugged. And it was crap. It was terrible. It was terrible. Badly recorded because I had no money.
Yeah,
I literally used the $500 that the government gave all the college students and made that record with $500, which is nothing.
The best we could, boys.
Which, that's nothing.
Yeah.
That's literally nothing. And I had 100 CDs made and used that to build up funds for the actual record that I actually wanted to do. And because of that, and we went to the studio this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
And my last semester was recording and marketing the Just the Way I Am record.
I wanted to ask you this because I was impressed the other night when we were playing at Munson's. Is your stage presence and like even awareness is pretty good, man. I was really impressed with that. Was that something that you would pick up while just playing shows, or maybe early when you were being the roadie for your dad, or is that something that was taught to you at Delta?
Well, I wouldn't say it was. I mean, I was on stage maybe a handful of times while my dad was singing,
mm-hmm.
but most of the time I wasn't. So I wouldn't say that I got that from the Harmon Quartet or my dad's quartet. And I appreciate you saying that because that's something I've been working on.
Yeah,
is stage presence. But growing up in church, I grew up in a church, Magby Baptist Church down off of Highway 50. My preacher that's still my preacher today held me in his arms when I was born in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I was literally born in this church. Mm-hmm. This church is literally my family, you know. And growing up in there, the preacher would always saying, "You're gonna sing a song," and I wouldn't sing unless I got some money.
Oh boy.
Like, he would give me a dollar.
A little bit off from the table.
Right. He'd give me a dollar. And I would go up there.
Pass that hat around, buddy.
Yeah, I would go up there and sing. And I had such stage fright that I would hide behind the pulpit with a microphone and just sing.
And now you got a guitar, man.
Right. Now I hide behind my guitar, right?
Yeah. Me too.
So over the years, I tried to, you know, playing around with church. Yeah, it's a sacred kind of feeling. You're playing sacred songs, gospel songs.
Mm-hmm.
But you also wanted to keep it light. I saw how my dad did shows, how they try to get the audience to laugh, in this case, the congregation. So, you know, just that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's probably where I got most of it. But a lot of it's just playing shows, man.
Just experience.
That's how you make it, is just playing shows, get in front of people.
How did the night that we met, you were opening up for Adam Hood, how did that get set up?
So Monk, who's also been on this podcast before, I started working with Monk over at the Columbus Arts Council,
mm-hmm.
Teaching guitar lessons because I needed some extra money. I hope it's no shocker that in the music industry, it's hard to make some money, especially until you get a pretty decent sized audience. But it's so a lot of times you have to have several jobs. Well, teaching guitar lessons was one of my other jobs at the Columbus Arts Council. And so I gave Monk who was working the front desk, I gave him my record, and he took it home and listened to it. And when I came back the next week, he offered it to me, saying how much that they would pay me to open up for Adam Hood, which I thought was
Was you familiar with who Adam Hood was?
I've heard of his name before, but I didn't know him. Like, I never listened to his stuff.
That dude is a ghostwriter. That dude just wrote some hits, buddy.
I tell you. And the second that I looked him up, I was, like, blown away. Like, I'm about to open up for this legendary dude that you know, look at the audience that this man's got. He's playing all over the country right now. Mm-hmm. He's in Texas right now.
Oh, he's got a huge following in Texas.
Texas is where I always wanted to play at. I love Texas. And, so I got that gig from Monk, and I opened up for him right a week or two before I opened up. That's when I found out he was going to debut at the Grand Ole Opry.
And not only that,
the day after the event.
Yeah.
So I was Adam Hood's last opener before he was an Opry singer.
How many people get to say that? Just you.
Yeah, that's right. And I've only ever met two or three other people that's ever played on Opry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Charlie Worsham and Charlie Crockett.
Yeah.
And Marty Stewart. And besides them, that's the only people I've ever met that's ever played on the Grand Ole Opry. And that's a huge deal. I don't know if people realize how big of a deal it is to play on the Grand Ole Opry, because they don't hardly let anybody new play there unless you prove it to them. You know, they have to ask you.
That's real. I mean, there are venues, and I'm blessed just with, like, previous bands that I've been in. Like, they come out of a list last year, and it was really praising Mississippi for their venues and, like, the most iconic. And when I looked at the top 10, I had played six of them.
Right.
And I was like,
probably Ground Zero and,
yeah,
and Hal Mouths or something.
Blue Canoe and Tupelo.
Blue Canoe, man, that's a place I've been trying to get into.
Yeah.
It's hard to get in that place.
Yeah, I had to talk to little Adam Morgan about that.
Well, hey, if you can put a good word in for me, man, I've already emailed him and I've been turned down too many times.
I'd say, well, he knows who you are.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do.
We could put on a show, man. We put on a show not too long ago.
Yeah. So I wanted to walk with you through. It seems like things really, really moved fast for you after leaving college. It wouldn't.
Yeah.
You got the record out, and then next thing you know, there's this record label.
Yeah. So I didn't get the. I was actually on the record label before it came out. Before the album came out.
Oh.
So I was on the Cotton Row Records. We got done with the album, basically. All the recording was done. My producer, Miss Trisha Walker, who's also the head person of all the music in Cleveland, Mississippi. She's my producer and my mentor, and she sent all of our recordings, unmixed and everything, to Aaron Mormon, who owns Cotton Row Records in Cleveland. And it wasn't long after that that I started getting emails and messages telling me that they want to sign a deal. And it was March. I can't remember exactly. I think it was like early March, March 7th, something like that. We officially signed.
How did that feel? It has to be like that. You know, that was like, you know, the high school student, it's signing day and he's about to go play college for his favorite football team. And he's like, I'm going with the University of Mississippi State. You know, whatever. Yeah. You know, whatever. It had to feel like that, right? I mean, it's like you're walking right in the dream,
like,
man.
It's like almost a validation feeling. You feel like, oh, I must be doing something right.
Yeah.
I literally have a record label.
Who are some more people that's worked on this label? Do you know?
It's me and just – and I think she's the lady, the girl that owns it also done some work. But there's been other people who she's collaborated with, who's Cotton Rose collaborated with. Is Jeff McCreary out of Cleveland, Mississippi. He's got a brand-new record out. He's got a brand-new song out called Rough Patch.
Okay.
By Jeff McCreary. I would highly advise. That's plugs, a great song. Baby. That's a great song.
Get on it, Porch Talkers.
That's right. Called The Rough Patch, or Rough Patch by Jeff McCreary. They do collab. That's one person that they collaborate with. He's not actually signed, but we've all collaborated together. And but since then, that's kind of it's kind of a validating feeling. That's when you know you're doing something right, when you got record labels knocking on your door, man. That's pretty cool. So we signed it, and they helped promote it. But we already had the record done by then, and we was actually in the mixing and mastering phase of the record. They just helped market it because I needed some money to market him with.
That's the biggest part of it too. It is one thing to put out a great record, but like if you got a great record but you can't get it out to an audience it can appeal to.
That's right.
Well, that's only half the battle. Yeah. Now you got a good record that ain't nobody gonna hear.
Right. So she helped me design a release party, and we did advertisements and a whole camp marketing campaign. And the last thing I did with Cotton Row was a Christmas song. We did a song called Run, Run, Rudolph, which is not like the Chuck Berry, Run, Run, Rudolph. It's not that.
Yeah.
This is a song about Rudolph and deer hunting.
Oh, boy. Mississippi style here.
Mississippi style. Now, Rudolph don't actually die, but he does get let off easy. And, yeah, it's called Run, Run, Rudolph. I did that back. I won't sing it. I'm singing now because
it's not Christmas anymore.
It's not Christmas time. I'm about sick and tired of Christmas time. But I love Christmas, but Christmas music is old. But,
yeah. Mariah Carey has went back to her cave.
That's right.
Until after Thanksgiving.
That's right. Actually, after Halloween.
That's more close.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's the last thing we did with Cotton Row, and but if there's more, if there's future stuff out there, we'll see. But I don't know.
I'd like to plug Braden and the arena. So recently had a show here at the arena.
Yes.
A little bit about that. I mean, pretty good turnout.
That was our best show that we've done. We did that show with it was me and Thomas Sanders, who is the famous. One of the best piano players in Mississippi, lives in Natchez, Mississippi. We call him the Little Killer because he's just like Jerry the Killer Lewis, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis. And we also had Ethan Oswalt, who's a local talent, open up for us. Yeah, I had a pretty decent turnout. But the thing is, it was a very interactive crowd, and I think it was good for the people of Columbus to try to start something new. And I think Braden's trying to start something, another show in around April or May, somewhere around there, with the arena. So if people are Columbus are listening, be ready for it.
Yeah, and come out and support it. I mean, it's so tough, like, in this town, like me and Braden has talked about it. It seems like I've been involved in this music scene for, you know, 15 years now, and it's always kind of ebbed and flowed with who the players were.
Right.
Who was the guy, the head and the heart, who was making things happen. And, you know, maybe that person moves on to maybe Nashville or maybe goes out to Texas or goes to Hattiesburg or whatever the case. And then it's kind of void, and then someone steps up, kind of revitalizes it. But it seems like we just really can't nail down, you know, what venue and who's going to do what.
Right.
And so I'm hoping to get to a place where we got, like, the arena, we got Munson Brothers and other places providing the burning piano even.
I think the hardest thing for Columbus – and Columbus is a great town. It used to be a big music town back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
We just got to try to convince people that music is worth listening to. Music is
I mean, we had music Blind Melon play at the Princess, you know.
Yeah, and
I
music is important.
That's pretty cool.
And music is, we just got to make sure people know music is important. And I think we'll be doing good once people feel like music is worth coming to. And
dude, I really appreciate y'all coming out for the open mic that we did at Monson's. I was really happy that y'all came out. I mean, we had three generations covered, man. We had the young guys, the middle guys, and the old guys.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it. It was the old guys and the middle guys that was there, and then our little squad of young folks. We all just blew the door out. Walked in. Now, I was surprised how many people how many guitars was there.
Yeah.
We had that whole floor covered with just guitar cases.
I took a picture of that.
Yeah, that was wild.
Put it as my wallpaper. I loved it.
Did they do that? Did y'all do it again? Did Munson and Brothers do that before?
We've tried, but not since we had the inside stage.
Right.
We would try to do an open mic a couple of times on the outside stage, and it wasn't anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I don't know. I hope we can redo that magic.
Well, you know, and they're not doing it.
Not this Thursday, but the next, 19th.
And the 19th. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm in town, I'll do it. I mean, I'd love to come out there again because I got some new songs.
Yeah, man.
I'd love to perform out there.
That's the thing about it. That's what I love about open mics is, like, man, that's, you got something new you want to try? Right. Or if you got, I mean, it might not even be a new song. It might be a new move. It might be like just, you might be changing your style altogether. But what a better place.
Well,
and especially like you're typically open mics, you're going to be performing for music lovers. But typically you're going to be playing for other musicians. And so it's a good way to get those kinks out.
Well, that's why I was so, you know, at first I wasn't, when I found out y'all was doing open mic, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to do probably all original songs because most places we play at, we have to play cover songs because mm-hmm. we don't have the big enough audience to play just all original stuff right now. So we had to play songs that everybody knows, and then, you know, put some original stuff in that set. But you know, these open mic nights, nobody's there. Everybody's just doing it for the love of music. So that was like the perfect opportunity to play some of my original songs. And seeing what other music lovers and, like we said, musicians and stuff like that would think about it. And that's like the perfect opportunity to play original music. And I love writing songs myself. You know, it's kind of a therapeutic thing. When I have time, you know, that's the hard part, is finding time to sit down and get your gear, butt into gear, and write a song.
What comes first for you, or maybe it depends, but a lot of times I'll write words first and then the music will come later. And I mean, every song was a little different, right?
Right. Well, you know.
But like if I'm at work, if I'm at work and an idea comes to my head, I'm pulling my note out, jot it down, think about it. Maybe an hour or two later, got a little something else.
Yeah.
Maybe it don't turn into anything. And then a year and a half down the road, I got this other idea. They're cooking, they make a baby. I got a song.
You know how many people has asked me that question about what do you write first?
Yeah.
So many people ask me that question.
And, it's tough,
and man. I tell them, it's like, it just depends. But, you know, for me, I usually come up with either, ooh, I'll even, sometimes I'll start with the hook, like, oh, man, this is catchy. Or I'll start with the music, just straight up come up with the whole progression of the music and then come up with words off that. Well, sometimes I have a co-writer, Miss Tricia, who's also my mentor. Sometimes she co-writes with me. A lot of times she comes up with the words first. And, you know, it's the saying that opposites attract. You know, writing with her is almost like, it's like it was meant to be, because I'll generate some ideas and she knows how to break them down. You know, she knows how to cut me down, but when I need it, she knows how to get all the bad stuff out of the song so we can find a new good stuff to put it, to fill the holes in, you know. But it depends. I mean, it always depends. I've written songs where words came first.
Yeah, and it's always a tough question, you know. Like, you know, what, you know, take Tom Bigby. I mean,
yeah.
What guitar came first?
Yeah, guitar came first from that. You know, I don't think. I'm not sure if there was a song that I was listening to that reminded me of that song or not. All I knew, how that song came about was we was getting ready to record the Just the Way I Am record and album, and I still had like a song to do, and it was like past Christmas, and we start January 6th, and I still have one empty slot. I wrote that song in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with my producer, Miss Tricia, and she said, well, what's some of the things that reminds you of home? Because we don't have a single song about back home in Columbus. And I said, well, I grew up on the river, you know, Tom Bigby River. It's like, well, you need to write a song about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up every Tom Bigby song, you know. There's only one that I could find. It's like the Tom Bigby Waltz, and it's like from the 1800s. And there's not another song out there that talks about the Tom Bigby. Nice. I don't think, at least. What I found on Apple Music.
Yeah.
So I decided to write a little song about the Tom Bigby Band, as if I was a steamboat captain, or trying to be a steamboat captain back mm-hmm. in the day, because it's back when it was called Possum Town, Mississippi, you know.
Word. Mm-hmm. So I told Adam, he asked why it was called Possum Town. I was like, because people sleep on it.
Yeah.
It's not why at all, but it's good.
Oh. Now, used to be a guy that ran the trading post on the river. He had a real long nose.
Yeah, wasn't he kind of crazy? Yeah.
Yeah, crazy, he was a crazy guy.
Yeah.
And he had a real long nose, and in Native American people, of course, it was in Native American language, possum.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we changed it to English version, you know?
Right.
Possum Town.
Well, dude, I got a. I don't know if you had anywhere else you wanted to go, but I got three questions walking out the door.
Okay.
Question one is plug social medias. Where can people find you and your music?
So y'all can find me at my website, www.mississippimason.com. Check it out. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Mississippi Mason. Pretty easy to remember, you know. I'm also on TikTok, but don't hold me to new content on TikTok. I try my best, but Instagram and Facebook is where I'm usually at.
I got you.
Y'all make sure y'all follow me on Spotify and Apple Music. Listen to the new record, the new Just the Way I Am record, and also the brand new Run Run Rudolph song. Really appreciate it.
Question two is, I mean, I've heard you speak a lot about the Grand Ole Opry, but if you was to give yourself a go for this year, or maybe even extend it to next year, what venue would you like to be playing in?
Yeah, what do you mean by, like, the goal by the end of 2024?
Sure. Like, where do you want to be?
You know, I would love to play at the Ellis Theater at the Congress of Country Music. Since that opened up, I saw the inside of it, and I'm like, I need to play at this place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping by maybe a year or two, hoping maybe if we can have the following to play in there, you know, that'd be great. Got a lot of work to do in between then. But the Ellis Theater in Philadelphia, Mississippi. I would love to play there by 2024, hopefully.
There you go. We're calling it out, Marty Stewart.
That's right.
Make it happen for us.
I met Marty Stewart. I hope he remembers me, but.
Yeah, we'll see. Oh, question three to walking out the door. Put you on the spot. What was your favorite part about this conversation?
Oh, you know, I enjoyed talking about. Favorite part of this conversation, you're talking about helping Columbus. I mean,
yeah,
you know, Columbus where I grew up, man. I want to see it flourish. Like Cleveland, Mississippi is flourishing right now in music. I would love to see Columbus get back to where it was back when Catfish Alley was huge,
man. Yeah, preach, dude.
Right, that was a huge thing, and hopefully one day I get back there. But I love talking about helping Columbus. That's why we did that whole show back December 3rd. Was to help Columbus, you know. It wasn't for profit at all. It was to help Columbus. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, right on. Mason, thank you so much, man.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.